With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is Tor, Moments in Time, a new series of audio documentaries where we bring you eyewitness accounts of key moments in Liverpool Football Club's history. The first story takes place between the 20th of February and the 22nd of February 1991, 48 hours which changed the football club forever. The story is narrated by me, John Gibbons, for the Anfield Rap. On the 22nd of February 1991, Kenny Dalglish resigned as manager of Liverpool Football Club, to the shock of the fans, the city and the wider football world. 2 days earlier, Liverpool had drawn 4-4 at Goodison Park in the FA Cup, despite leading the game four times in a match that showed all of the team's brilliance and frailties at once. Football commentator and friend of Kenny Dalglish, Clive Tildesley, was then working at Radio City in Liverpool as well as ITV.
Liverpool scored 4 of the best goals you'll ever see in the FA Cup that night. Scored 4 of the worst, scruffiest, horrible goals. Glenn Hussein and the goalkeeper sort of deciding between them, which of them was going to hesitate for the longest. And Everton, to their great credit, Sharpie and Tony Cotty had capitalised, and it was a memorable match in many ways, but it was a ridiculous scoreline. And if he hadn't made his mind up before that game, he must have made his mind up by the final whistle.
Glenn Hussein had been a signing from Fiorentina and was captain of Liverpool that night in Alan Hansen's absence.
I can't remember exactly what goal it was, but I left it between my legs. I thought I had got a pass from John Milby. And I thought he was playing to pass the ball back to Bruce Grobler. So I left it between my leg. And I thought that Grobler was going to take it, but Tony Cotty came between and scored. That was a mistake from me.
After the game, there were reports of arguments in the Liverpool dressing room, something that Hussein denies.
No, I can't remember any arguments. I know that Ronnie Moran was quite upset for something. I don't know if it was because of the result or can't remember. But I can't remember there was any upset between the players. Not what I can remember.
Journalist and Liverpool fan Brian Reid was then working for the Liverpool Echo.
The 4-4 at Goodison wasn't a particularly disastrous result, but for a lot of Liverpool fans that night, how did you let Cotty come off the bench and pull him 2 back? Things aren't right. There was a sense that things aren't right at Anfield.
Things weren't right at Anfield, and particularly for Kenny Dalglish. The following day, Dalglish informed the club executives of his desire to leave Liverpool. Dalglish was asked to reconsider, to have a break, but he was insistent on his decision. The first people to find out about Kenny's resignation were his family. Sky Sports and BBC 5 Live presenter Kelly Cates was then Kelly Dalglish, a 16-year-old living with her parents in Southport.
I remember coming back from school and I'd gone over to my friend's house who lived across the road, and I got called back and my mum had said, oh, come back. And I genuinely thought I was in trouble because of the tone of her voice and, being called back early from my mates. It was really weird. And I went into the house and mum said, I need to tell you, dad's leaving Liverpool. And I remember being just so confused. I was like, what do you mean leaving? Because it's all I'd known since I was 2. So, I didn't have any memory of a time when it wasn't part of life. And she said, yeah, he's leaving, as in he's handing in his resignation and he's not going back and they're going to announce it tomorrow. And it was just a really strange, experience. It's probably overstating it to say it felt like a death, but it did feel like an ending, and it's those similar feelings. Right, it's not as extreme as that, but definitely along those lines. That's kind of how it felt. And then later that night, he came back and he brought a box full of stuff from his office, and I remember just sobbing, just thinking, this is it. it was the weirdest, strangest thing in the world. It just didn't feel real because it's kind of been as much a part of our lives as any of the people in it, really. It was always there. So the fact that it was all changing was really unsettling and really sad.
That night, Kelly remembers seeing her father for the first time and that expression that will be on every news channel and in every paper over the next few days.
He looked how he did in the press conference when he came home. It was that same expression, that same kind of slightly stunned expression where it just felt like it was sort of, it was almost happening at a remove from him. And that was the way his face was in the press conference, just the way it was when he walked in the front door.
Next, Kenny informed his coaching staff. Future Liverpool manager Roy Evans was working as a coach under his fourth Liverpool manager.
The next morning, I get a phone call of Kenny. And he says, he called me Eddie, because remember one of my many nicknames the other day. He always used to call me Eddie. So Eddie, he said, so what do you want now? What's your problem? What have you got? And I'm messing that. And he said, so he went, so as Kenny, he was like one of them guys, like, oh, like a prank, like a bit of fun. He said, I'm packing up. I said, yeah, all right, yeah, you're packing up, okay, you had it all before, what are you doing, what do you want? And he said, no, I'm packing up, I seriously am, I've decided I don't want to, you know, sort of do it anymore. And to be fair, I was, you know, like, you could have hit me with a, you know, cricket bat, to be fair, I've not a clue why, but there was no signs, so I didn't see any signs, and I'm sure to this day that Ronnie Moran didn't, because we were both gobsmacked at the end of it.
Later that day, the players gathered before training at Anfield, mostly unaware of the monumental information they were about to receive.
We were sitting in the dressing room, and he came in. This is before the training in the morning, I think it was. Yeah, it must have been. But in the dressing room, and he came in, and I said, okay, boys, I've had enough. Good luck. And he left. Not more than that. So everybody was shocked.
Alan Hansen was a close friend of Kenny Dalglish, who knew of the decision already, which he saw as an opportunity to get one over on his teammates and bosses. Liverpool goalkeeper Bruce Grobbelaar tells the story.
He walks out of the dressing room, and then Alan Hansen stood up and walked out. And about 2 minutes later, he comes back and stood where Kenny had just been standing. He said, all right, guys, I'm just here to inform you that you're going to be getting an interim manager, and that's going to be me. And he said, he started, hey, you, Bruce, stay on your line, son. Don't come out of this, out to the halfway line. You just do your job and stay in your box. Stevie Nicol, what's this that you've been drinking too much? And he goes right through the team. John Barnes, you're living on top of a pizza parlor. It looks like you've eaten all the pizzas. And he's gone around everybody, hammered everybody. Comes to Ronnie Moran. Ronnie Moran, you too hard on all the players. You must soften up a bit. And you, Roy Evans, you must get some hardness from him because you're too soft. And then he walks out the dressing room, goes down the corridor. And we're thinking like this. Now, I was sitting next to Ronnie Moran. Next minute, there's two sets of feet coming down the corridor. In goes Alan Hansen, and he sits down. In comes the chairman. Chairman Long White said, we've been trying to persuade Kenny to, you know, to carry on. We're trying to ask him to carry on, but he's insistent that he's going to go. So we need a new interim manager. And the new interim manager, and everybody looked at Alan Hansen, is Ronnie Moran. Now, Ronnie Moran, all I heard is, I'm going to kill that bastard.
Now it was time for Kenny to face the press. Liverpool had called a press conference with very little other information given, although the Liverpool Echo had received a tip-off from a very senior source at Anfield. Firstly, Brian Reid, and then current head of sport at the Liverpool Echo, David Prentice, tell the story.
I didn't know this at the time. But that morning, Peter Robinson rang up Rick George, he was the Liverpool correspondent, said, look, it's going to be this press conference at 11 o'clock. You will want to be there. It's a big one. And he went, can you tell us anything? I can't tell you anything. So Ken Rogers, who was the sports editor, hears this. And he thinks this must be massive. He rings him up. Robinson isn't telling him. He eventually says, look, I can promise you no one. He said, okay, Kenny's quitting at 11 o'clock. I was just like, what ears, but you can't tell anyone, you can't breathe a word. So they did up two front pages that morning. There was the Standard Echo page. I think it was Michael Heseltine saying there's no more money for Liverpool, something like that. So that was the front page I was seeing that was getting composed. And meanwhile, a team of two people were putting together the Kenny Quits.
Ken then disappeared up to Anfield for the press conference. And this is the days long before mobile phones. And at Anfield back then, there was one payphone at the top of the staircase. And Ken, who was having to ring the office just to say that, yes, Kenny's walked into the room, therefore press the button on that edition that's got prepared, Kenny Quits. He had to get that information back to the office. So he's there, didn't want to go into the press conference itself in case somebody picked up the phone and kept it engaged for 10 or 15 minutes. So he's got this phone, he's got his 10p poised to go in it, and he's just keeping half an eye in the, I think it was the trophy room at Manfield as was, absolutely rammed full of people. He sees Kenny Dalglish walk in, realise that yes, you know, so he's not had second thoughts, it is going to happen. Pressed the button, rang, you know, 227-2000, got through, you know, so said, like, yeah, it's happening. Pressed the button on it. That was it then, you know, so the paper hit the stands.
They come out to me and go, big change of plan. Kenny's quit. I went, oh, yeah, whatever, yeah. No, he has. And there's the front page. And I went, Jesus Christ, just hit me, you know. And I remember looking at that front page and he looked a lost man. In fact, what it reminded me of was, you know, when you see a child goes missing or somebody goes missing and they bring a relative forward to talk about it and they look, their emotions are just completely so complex, you can't read them. And Kenny's just sitting there, this lost, this gone figure, looking 10 years older than he is. And yeah, he's gone. And it was just, it was a bizarre, bizarre feeling, you know, it really was. Of course, we were top of the league. Okay, there'd been the 4-4 with Evan, but we're still in the FA Cup. No one could see the signs of it. And you're wondering, well, what's going to happen now, you know?
Henry Winter was then working at the Independent newspaper and is now chief football writer at the Times. He also co-wrote Kenny Dalglish's autobiography.
Huge shock at the time in 1991 when Kenny Dalglish announced that he was leaving. No one had really had a whisper, and it reflected the huge scale of it. That I remember looking at the Liverpool Echo, the front page, and obviously had that very gaunt-looking photograph of Kenny announcing his the fact that he was leaving the club at the press conference. But what I always remember, and it was like sort of journalistic eye, was just looking at the secondary story down the page, which was basically, I think the headline was something like, Iraq says that the ground war has started. And you just think, that is the size of it. You know, we're on the brink of World War III, and yet football, for me, quite rightly in a way, takes precedence. And just looking at Dalglish's face, and obviously it was shortly after the, you know, the 4-4, but you know, just you realised how haunted he was and how deep his pain. I think Liverpool were 3 points clear at the top of the table at the time, so you know, he wasn't leaving them in a you know, down the bottom of the table or struggling. So it was clearly beyond footballing reasons why he was leaving.
There are certain sports stories that you hear and it comes as a shock because the timing, there was no suggestion that it was about to happen. But almost in the same breath, you kind of nod your head and think, I'm not surprised. Some sports stories happen like that and 2 weeks later, he's still shaking your head saying, I can't believe that's happened. I cannot believe he's left that job, or they've got rid of him, or they've sold him, or they bought him. But it was one of those sports stories which took you by surprise because there was no inkling of it, or no public inkling of it. But once it had happened, you thought, yeah, yeah. And in a slightly patronising kind of a way, as a friend of his, not a close friend, but a friend of his, there was almost a bit of relief. Good, you deserve it. Just, you know, take a rest.
With the news breaking on a Friday lunchtime, most Liverpool fans were in work, including season ticket holder Rob Gutman.
It must have come over the radio, and it was sort of like 11 in the morning, and it was as gobsmacking, I think, probably to my generation there, as the Shankly resignation had been when it happens in 74. We've all, you know, I grew up seeing those clips of little scouse urchins looking absolutely visibly shaken and shocked. And I was with my best mate who goes to the match with me. We worked together and we just sort of came in and out of each other's bit of this building and went, have you heard? Have you heard? And we were just struck dumb. We knew it wasn't perfect, but he was Kenny, you know, everything he did turned to gold. And if he had adversity, it was just another challenge that he'd overcome. So you never saw this coming in a million years. We just sort of shut up shop for the day. We just went back. We went to try and grab an Echo. The Echo was like a morning edition. I remember going and grabbing an Echo and seeing an image of a haunted looking Kenny in the paper. And I'm not ashamed to say it, but I don't like to say it out loud too often, but I cried, really properly cried. And I hadn't cried about anything. So the last time had been 2 years previously over Hillsborough and the aftermath of that and the day itself. And maybe it was a part of that. There was sort of a tension linked to that and Kenny's being inextricably linked to it. I was just blubbed like a baby on my own. And I could, you know, it was very hard to make sense of it because he was just, it was a final full stop. Kenny was such a hero because of what he'd been as a player and then how he'd sort of rescued the club in its darkest hour post Heysel and also the team on the wane. And then he'd taken us to the heights of the double, and then he'd been such a rock post Hillsborough. It felt like Kenny's magical effect over the club, I suppose, like Shankly's before him. It seemed like it needed to go on forever, and yet it had to stop. But it stopped with such an abrupt full stop of a way.
Liverpool fans and writers Kev Sampson, John Macken and Mike Nevin came together to discuss their memories of Kenny's departure.
It came on the radio that Dalglish had thrown the towel in. And it was a very, very sad moment. It's one of those that there and then, you know, feels like a historic moment when you hear big news and you know that it's going to have a profound impact. And unfortunately, that was, you know, that was a self-fulfilling prophecy because arguably, you know, we may still not have recovered from the ramifications of that.
I was in work at my desk, right at the Home Office in Bootle, St John's House, and mixed crowd in there, reds and blues, and the Evertonians were dancing in the office. It was like, you know, somebody pulled the rug out from under us, which it was, in a sense. You know, they thought, with Dalglish gone, he couldn't take the fact that we didn't beat them in the cup tie. And they were cock-a-hoop, and we were all just like gobsmacked. Obviously, you know, no internet to look these things up on or check veracity of it, so people are in the canteen with the radio on.
I had my first job in town working for a loss adjusters, and I only came home from work twice. One because my nan had died, and my dad rang up to say, your nan's dead. And the other time was like Dalglish has resigned. And I felt like I had to go home straight away to comfort my dad and myself because it was seismic. Dalglish resigned. You couldn't believe it.
Because of the shock of the decision and the few words by Kenny himself, the silence was filled by people's own theories on why Dalglish may have resigned. Liverpool were top of the first division, but standards were high at Anfield, and both the quality of football and the ability of signings had received criticism. Football commentator Graham Beecroft was sports editor at Radio City in Liverpool at the time.
Liverpool were not playing as well as they should have played. And if you look back now at the signings that Kenny made between the Hillsborough disaster and that particular game, some of them were really poor signings. Not only were they poor signings in terms of the fact that they weren't very good footballers in the first place, but also there were poor signings from the point of view that Liverpool had a style of play, the pass and move style of play, which Liverpool had under Shankly and more so under Paisley. And, you know, when they were such a fantastic side with fantastic players. And I think that Kenny, and he admitted afterwards, of course, had lost it to a certain extent in that respect. His signings were not footsure, and they weren't players who were going to benefit Liverpool Football Club. So I suspect, and it's turned out that, you know, that Kenny thought, this isn't working for me. He wanted to retain, of course he did, and the fans wanted to retain his position as one of the greats, if not the greatest player with Liverpool Football Club. And he didn't want to tarnish that image, quite rightly. He wanted to step down, step aside, get some breathing space, and see what's happened. Kenny wouldn't have gone to the end of his contract or wouldn't have wanted to go on knowing that the side was struggling just to get a payoff from the football club. That wouldn't have been Kenny Dalglish and Kenny Dalglish's love for Liverpool.
If I'm being honest with Kenny, there's been a bit of criticism growing that year. It wasn't, the football wasn't the best. Some strange decisions going on. The midfield seemed to be full of fullbacks all the time. Barry Venison was playing, Burrows was playing, Gary Ablett was playing. Kenny had become very kind of almost defensive minded. Beardsley was getting left out because it was the big kind of, I mean, even that 4-4 at Goodison happened two nights earlier. He recalled Beardsley and there was talk of a couple of the players gloating in his direction. There was talk of a massive row in the dressing room. We knew things weren't that great. There were problems there. Seems strange now. Liverpool top of the league and some fans aren't happy. Well, actually, probably not. But back then, the standards were so high that it seemed to be, you know, people weren't enjoying their football as much. And Kenny wasn't enjoying his football as much. And that was part of the problem. You know, he later says, you know, I couldn't make decisions anymore. I was paralysed. I couldn't make decisions. I knew it was no good for me. I mean, the man, he was suffering a form of a nervous breakdown. You know, there's no doubt about it. Nervous exhaustion, sorry. He'd been pushed emotionally to the limits. And almost, when your standards are that high, personally, and Liverpool standards were so high, almost the fear of failure is worse than failure itself. Because some managers can take failure. Well, I know, I've tried my best, I'm going, I'll get a payoff. But the fear of Liverpool dropping slightly below, and you're 39 years of age, and hearing this criticism, you just don't have to handle it. You know, no wonder the man was so pushed.
I'm remembering specific bad days, cup games where we conceded too many goals. There's a 3-0 beating down at Highbury we get, which struck me as a bit of a red-letter day. I think that's earlier on in that season. Kenny's famously criticised for playing six left-backs. All manner of lads who could play left-back were in the team, and it felt like a very defensive, dour Liverpool.
There were also some suggestions that Kenny wasn't getting the backing from the board that he felt he deserved, a theory supported by Bruce Grobbelaar.
I think that he wanted to buy a player to come to Anfield, and he wasn't allowed to get the money from the chairman. And so he resigned. I believe he said to the board that he's going to do something that they might regret, and he did. He resigned, and where did he go to next? And he bought a striker for 3.75 million, and he actually scored at Anfield to win the league. He would have come, if he had come to us, I think that Kenny would have been, his immortality would have been even higher, because he saw the future and saw the future of the club and which player he could bring in. And because it was denied to him, I believe that is the reason he didn't carry on with us.
Brian Reid had experienced a surprising lack of support at board level for Dalglish firsthand.
Something I don't think is spoken about enough, the boardroom had changed. Smith had gone and Noel White was in charge. Now, I had a meeting with Noel White. And the day Kenny resigned, this all came back to me because I used to be a football writer on the Post as well as a sub. I'd gone over to the Echo as a columnist and I started a weekly columnist, but obviously I'd returned to football in Liverpool. And I wrote a column, a very mocking column one day about the facilities at Anfield. And there was talk about England might get the World Cup in whatever year and Liverpool would host it. So I just did a piss-taking column about, imagine, you know, the Brazilians trying to get a cup of tea at half-time and go for a pee, stuff like that. One of those standard things. And he called me in. He called me in to talk to me, talk me through, show me all the plans. And all. I thought, why is the chairman of Liverpool showing me all this? I don't really want to know, you know. He starts asking me what's the feeling about, you know, amongst the fans. And I was saying, well, about Kenny and that. And I said, well, it's been great this season, hasn't it? You know, blah, 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 what I've just said, you know, a bit defensive, blah, blah, blah. And he starts piling in with the criticisms. I'm thinking, hang on a minute. Sorry for me to talk about Kenny to my mates, but you respect, you know. And he's joining in and I've gone, the signings have been great and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I'm sure things will be fine. And he was agreeing with me. And it was only when I thought about that day about why Kenny had gone, and I thought, well, it's easy when the fans criticise you because you expect that. You're always going to get the fans. The changing room, if certain players in the changing room, senior players, are unhappy, you're going to kind of get that now and again. But if you haven't got the backing of the board, then you know you're struggling on three levels. I think Liverpool were quite happy when Dalglish said he wants to go to think, well, maybe he has burnt out and maybe Graham Souness is up there. We need discipline. We can't go and buy all these players, but some of those older players, they need They need knocking into shape a bit more. We've got some lads coming through, maybe Souness is the man.
Henry Winter remembers the press speculation at the time and a surprising lack of consideration given to the Hillsborough disaster, which had taken place less than 2 years previous.
I think in the immediate aftermath of Dalglish's resignation, there were a lot of opinion pieces, as he would suggest, by people living in the South and not being aware of what had been going on in his life or up on Merseyside so much. And they completely misread the mood. I think he phoned the Post that afternoon just to say, because there'd been some sort of talk about, oh, had he had a falling out with anyone at the club? And I think he rang the Post and spoke to, I think it was Phil McNulty, and said, actually, no, there was none of that. You know, I am going because I cannot do this job anymore. And I think it was only later that the true reasons fully came out. I think maybe it was because people assumed that he wasn't under this strain, which clearly took its toll and was the reason why he left Liverpool. But people maybe not close to the situation didn't realise that, because he had been so strong and during the whole Hillsborough and the aftermath. So maybe they just, it was a shock, and well, people were looking for sort of other reasons. But I have to say, that was a period of English journalistic history which probably wasn't the industry's finest hour, that period anyway. I mean, Liverpool fans don't know who she told, but I think there was a lot of jumping to the wrong conclusions, you know, in the previous sort of 2-3 years. And there was an element of people maybe not considering enough. But also, I don't think Dalglish necessarily, because he's not in his nature, to have sat at that press conference, which he clearly wanted to leave as quickly as he could, and actually explain the real reasons why he'd gone. Maybe he hadn't analysed it fully. Maybe he wasn't completely clear of, you know, what had triggered it. But clearly, you know, as he looked back on it, he would realise that Hillsborough completely was the cause.
I don't think anybody was going around going Hillsborough, because Hillsborough wasn't using that in that context then. Hillsborough wasn't using that context for a long time. You know, it wasn't given the full appreciation of the effect it had on people, because a lot of people didn't want it to. They wanted to think, look, we can't keep dwelling on this. We need to move on. People were asking Kenny, he said, no, it's nothing up with me. Not me. I'm taking daily injections, I've got blotches all over my body, and I'm screaming at my kids for no reason, you know. And I was a teetotaler when I was a player, but now to get through it, I'm starting to drink wine, you know. Of course, there's mental health issues, but you didn't bring it up then as a man, you know. And you would have gotten you'd got very little sympathy then anyway, you know, because you would have had people going, what, a football manager? Don't forget the economy at the time. There's people who haven't got jobs, and you've got mental health issues. What kind of pressure is that? You'd get that all the time. And it was a lack of an appreciation of what pressure was. As I say, you know, the pressure that he was under. I mean, Shankly said, the pressure eats away at you. This job eats away at you. All your life, your family life, it eats away at it. If you love the club that much, and there's so much 100% pressure on you to do well, it eats into your soul.
Writer and Liverpool fan Tony Evans had moved to California in the aftermath of Hillsborough.
Even, you know, from 6,000 miles away, you know, going to watch the games of a Saturday morning, you could see the strain on his face. You could see that, you know, he was where he was heading. And the thing is, I was in California because what happens, and I didn't recognise that I was having, after Hillsborough, a sort of nervous breakdown, because you think you're normal. And given what Kenny went through and what he saw, and that his involvement with the families, no wonder it affected him. No wonder it took such a toll. And, you know, I don't think, especially in those days, none of us thought in terms of, you know, talking to anyone or getting help of any sort. I suppose Kenny would have been in the same position as people like me. A lot of people like me go, it didn't happen to me. You know, I was the one, nothing happened to me that day. Other people died, other people were injured. No, nothing happened to me. And yet, whenever anyone goes through an event like this, there's bound to be an effect on them. Someone should have realised that he was taking on not just the strain of running a football club, managing a football club like Liverpool, which is difficult enough, but he seemed to be taking the weight of the city's pain on himself. And someone there should have noticed. Someone should have said, you know, this is too much for any human to bear. he needed help, and he was helping so many people, and who was there to help him?
It is absolutely impossible to exaggerate how immense Kenny Dalglish and Marina Dalglish were in the weeks and months following the Hillsborough tragedy. It almost becomes, because he is a legendary figure, it almost becomes taken as read that he was a leader, a counsellor, almost a politician in the wake of a disaster the likes of which, you know, none of us could have countenanced. So the first thing to remember when you start to consider Kenny Dalglish's resignation is that his conduct and the sense of responsibility that he took, the leadership that he gave, not just the football club, but the city, and actually in the absence of anybody else giving any proper leadership, the nation, in response to that disaster, was fantastic. It was huge. It was massive. It was much bigger than anything that he could have really believed that he had within him. And that's what he gave. And before you even start to think about how he reacted those months later, that needs recording and it needs remembering and replaying. Kenny and Marina Dalglish were the two people who helped Liverpool Football Club, Merseyside and the country start to come to terms with Hillsborough.
Listen, everybody lived through it, but I believe that Kenny Dalglish should have been knighted for his efforts and how he conducted himself around Hillsborough. It was himself and the councillors that counselled us came up with this theory that if we go to the victims' houses and knock on the doors, that you can counsel them while counseling yourself, which is actually happened. It did. It helped everybody in the team. I don't think that you'll hear anybody say that it didn't help. And for that, I believe he should have been knighted. And that's just my feeling. That's he handled himself, him and his wife, Marina, handled himself with most dignified way and helped everybody else in the process.
That leaves a scar on you, that's for sure. I mean, it's still there again. I mean, it affected everybody massively. And Kenny was obviously with the extra burden of being the manager, who knows, but I didn't spot it. Maybe we're all in our own sort of little world at the time, or maybe we're all suffering a little different, but none of us, I certainly didn't spot Kenny being anything different. But obviously, at home, he must have been. And maybe that's what he said, it's about from my family. And I say you've got to respect that.
It's something I noticed more in retrospect. I think at the time, it's just your dad being moody. It's not really a big deal, or your dad telling you off, or your dad being snappy. It's just, oh, he's in a bad mood, and it doesn't really... And it's not like, you know, it's not like he went from being, you know, Father Christmas to the Grinch. It was, you know, it was only a sort of version of himself. He was still himself, but he probably was snappier, and he probably felt more that his temper was, you know, was shorter at that time. He was definitely, I mean, looking back in hindsight, he definitely was grumpier, he definitely was snappier, he definitely was angrier, and he would definitely just kind of, like, lose his temper at stupid things and just be like... But you just kind of got used to it. It wasn't that big a deal. You just kind of get on with it. Mm. So now, looking at how he is now and thinking about how he was before, I can definitely see the change in him over that period.
Ronnie Moran was temporary manager of Liverpool until April that year, when Graeme Souness was appointed Liverpool manager. Should Liverpool have waited until the summer to see if Kenny was willing to return? Or were they right to appoint a new, highly successful manager who had also been one of Liverpool's greatest ever players? After all, the club is bigger than any one man, even a king. It is a debate that still rages until this day.
And what they should have done, undoubtedly, is said to Kenny, look, you're ill. You haven't had a break from football. You've come from being the best player in Britain to the best manager. You've taken them through these disasters, and you've never stopped. Never stopped. Never time for your family. Goes to the end of the season. It's February now. End of the season. You know, Ronnie Brown will take over. Come back. If you didn't do that, they were quite happy to accept it, I think. You know, many times over the years, particularly early on, I thought, if only they'd said to him, go and have a holiday, come back, you know, sort yourself out, and we pick up again. Because, of course, he wasn't a spent force. He went to Blackburn and he won the Premier League. So that premise that, you know, you only know how much you value something when it's gone, I think was very true about Kenny's management. And we were so arrogant at the time that we thought, well, it'll just roll on anyway. The system's still there. As if, you know, this is, you know, we've been at the top now right at the top, really since 73. You know, forget the 60s, that's 18 years. You know, of course things are going to go on. Who's going to challenge us? Arsenal, go away, you know. And some people were thinking, well, maybe Souness, because Souness had a great record at Rangers. We thought maybe that's what they need, you know. I think, see, people weren't unhappy when it was announced that Graeme Souness could come in. So I just think there was a sense of maybe Kenny looks ill, maybe that's it, maybe he needs a break. Maybe he's telling us he can't carry on doing the job. And if that's the case, you know, it's a shame, but we're Liverpool, we'll be okay.
Well, he clearly needed a break. I think but a couple of weeks wouldn't have been enough. I mean, you know, he could have got that during the international break. You know, he needed to actually go away and look, he's never going to clear his head of those memories of going to all the funerals, of the pain suffered by so many people and pain that's still being felt now. But I just think maybe in the modern world, when people, you know, in the 21st century, when people are a little bit more aware of stresses in the workplace and in people's lives, they would have said, just take 6 months off. But then in fairness to the club, and Liverpool are a very compassionate club, particularly when Peter Robinson was right in the heart of it, they still have to run a club. You know, they had to get a manager in. So maybe Kenny would have come back in the summer. I don't know. Probably would have done. But for Dalglish's health and his well-being, he clearly needs to have a significant break.
I don't know if this generation have loved. I mean, I know Gerrard was hugely adored, but loved. I think Kenny was truly loved by a portion of our fan base, and of which I very much was one, by a large swathe of it. And we didn't want to see him in pain. We didn't want to see him criticised. So I think the book being closed on Kenny was, in some respects, a relief. You know, once it was obvious that the king was dead, I was in a long live the king kind of mood. At the end of the day, you want to get yourself up and watch Liverpool Football Club again. No one's bigger than the club, as Kenny would be the first to say. And I was excited about the future.
I assumed, I suppose, like most people, that the way the club had been run, the transition, because I'd lived through the transition from Shankly to Paisley, Paisley to Fagan, Fagan to Dalglish, and you think, oh yeah, you know, it's all just going to carry on. And I thought that the club as an entity in itself was self-sustaining, and I didn't realise that actually, no, what it was the people who were actually involved and the people who were running, who created this sort of dynasty in football. And once you removed the most important people, that was all going to fall apart. And so I was quite confident that things would get better and, you know, and improve. The next few years came as a terrible shock.
Fast forward almost 20 years to January 2011, when Kenny Dalglish does finally return to Liverpool as manager, much to the delight of every Liverpool fan. Well, nearly.
I was terrified when he went back, because what are you going to do? I mean, it wasn't exactly an easy job to be going into. Plus, there would be all the expectations. Plus, the first game was against Man United. And you were just like, don't do this. This is not... I wouldn't say that to him. It's not my decision to make, but oh my God. And also, like from the time he was at Liverpool, the time before, to like 20 years later, it's just not quite 20 years later, 15 years later, it's a completely different job. The focus on it, the intensity of the scrutiny, all of that is just so much bigger than it was from the last time he was at Liverpool. And he's had a bit of that, you know, from the time at Blackburn and Newcastle and Celtic. But he hadn't had that sort of recent experience of it, which I'd seen from the other side. But I just knew what he was going into. And I was like, I was so worried for him that he'd made this decision. But again, it was a decision that once he's decided he's going to do it, it makes sense. And I was just, he was so happy to be going back that it was really lovely to see, especially the first game at Anfield. That was just watching him going out. And because the stand hadn't been redeveloped, it was still the main stand and it was still the dugout. And it was just really, it was really emotional to see him because he was so happy. And because he was so kind of caught up in the whole emotion of it, and he's become more emotional probably as he's got older. I think everyone does, but especially men. But because he was so emotional about it, it was really moving. It was really lovely to see. You sort of get, I almost felt like a parent. I almost felt like I was going, oh God, look at him, he's so happy. And I think as much as, you know, because they won the League Cup, even though it didn't go well in the league, I think he feels like he went back and he took a trophy. And I think he feels like that's closed things off for him. He feels like there's a sort of resolution there. The story's reached a natural endpoint, which I think is really nice for him and really important for him.
I was a little worried for him coming back. I mean, I felt the same about Howard Kendall both times, really. I'm sure great people with the great boxers have told them not to go back in the ring, and there's something there that, I mean, I know people in football today who work in, you know, on my side and are relaxed and happy and, you know, they've got family lives and everything, and they still want to get back into management. It's just like some kind of drug. And when you're as intense about your commitment as Kenny was and is, it's almost a sense of duty. I think there's almost a sense that if the phone rings and he was asked today to, you know, Jurgen Klopp's decided to go and manage Germany or whatever, we want you to. I don't think he'd say no. I just think he feels that when the call comes, that his involvement, he probably feels if the football club's given him far more than he's given the football club. I'm not sure he's right about that, but that's the kind of man he is. And so I think he would see it as a matter of duty to come back. And he, you know, he came back in those circumstances. And it was the same as always. Hugely unhelpful. bloody difficult in interviews. It was like he'd never been away. And that was a good sign. I thought, oh, okay, that's good. We've got you back then. Oh, good. Oh, great.
I think sometimes when you do move out and you leave, then you realise how much of a big decision that it was. At the time, you maybe didn't think it was, but I think he always wanted to come back, and he got that chance.
Well, it was brilliant, and it, you know, because as you say, I mean, it was clear how much it was going to mean to Dalglish, and I did a second book with him, and I remember him talking about that, about it was, you know, how just getting back, being Liverpool manager, his emotion towards the Kop. And I can remember him saying, he said, I would love to be in the Kop one day. And it, in a way, it was just, it summed up Dalglish, how much Liverpool was a part of him, that, you know, he's played for the club, he's managed the club, he's been an ambassador for the club, still is an ambassador for the club. And yet, ultimately, the most important thing you can say about Kenny Dalglish's relationship with Liverpool Football Club is that he's a fan of the club. And I thought that was brilliant. As a writer, I immediately thought, right, that's the intro. That's the opening chapter. Kenny Dalglish sitting in the dugout, looking at the Liverpool fans in the Kop, said, I want to be in there. That is part of it. It's like when Gerrard scored against Olympiacos, the first thing he wanted to do was dive into the crowd, even though he knew he'd get a booking. Because there is that element, that sort of emotional engagement with the Kop.
When he came back, I think that was one of the most joyous moments in my whole support of the club. It seemed right. It seemed natural. You know, in the Gillette and Hicks era, we'd been through a civil war, you know, inside and outside the club. We kind of lost our identity in some respects, because with all the infighting going on and the sense of purposelessness in that was surrounding the whole place, and, you know, Hodgson to come in, and he was just totally alien to everything that has ever regarded as being part of Liverpool's fabric and culture. And then Kenny come back, and it was almost it revived all those feelings and all that sense of what the place was about. And it was brilliant. The feeling was right. Now we can move forward after those years, awful years, where who knew where the club was heading?
And all of a sudden, all the wounds on the cop were healed. The cop had been bloody fighting, you know, anti-Rafa, anti-this, anti-that, the Hodgson this, Hodgson that. And overnight, everyone was united.
Stunned and elated in a way I hadn't expected to be elated, because I was well over him. I thought I was. But it was there was a deep subconscious emotional reaction for me, and I think many people of my generation about it. I remember sort of saying again to my friend who had been with on the day it happened, who I still go to every single match with, I said, it's weird, it feels like we've got the club back. And I mean, not just back from the Hodgson grip, I mean from the 24 years since we'd been the real Liverpool that I'd grown up with. The Liverpool I've spent most of my adult life with is the Liverpool that we know and love today. And it's a fantastic football club. It wins things every now and again. It lifts us, it disappoints us, and it has this history. But it has a different feeling to the way it felt to me growing up, where it was this mighty sporting force, and therefore all the emotion and all the culture around it was for a purpose. And the purpose was winning and being the best. And Kenny reeked of that vibe. And when he came back, it was like, and the way he talked and the way he was in a press conference, it was like, wow, this just feels like our Liverpool back. I don't know. Obviously, it was an illusion, because he couldn't single-handedly make that all happen again. But for a moment, it seemed possible.
Tour Moments in Time is produced by myself and Josh Sexton, with support from everybody at the Anfield Rap. Huge thanks to all the voices you heard. In order of appearance, that was Clive Tildesley, Glenn Hussein, Brian Reid, Kelly Cates, Roy Evans, Bruce Grobbelaar, David Prentice, Henry Winter, Rob Gutman, Kev Sampson, John Macken, Mike Nevin, Graham Beecroft and Tony Evans. Thanks for their time and belief in a project that didn't exist. Tour Moments in Time can only happen because of the people who subscribe to Tour Player, our monthly subscription service. If you are one of those people, thank you. If you aren't, then it costs just £5 a month. You can find out more at theanfieldrap.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.